B-Pod Studios.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Now joining us, a fabulous offensive mind. He's one of the great follows on Twitter. Watch him, study, learn from him. Dan Orlovsky, ESPN, one of my faves on the Comcast Business Hotline. Danny.
Good morning. What's going on, champ?
Did you put your hat in the ring for OC?
There's wheels in motion for lots of things in my life.
Good. Let me ask you a question. Would you like to do that? Would you like to get into coaching?
I'm in the right situation with the right people. Absolutely. I'll always want to coach. It's kind of how I was wired as a player in that role. And what I do now is I view as coaching as well. And, on television, just coaching a bunch of people, but in the right situation with the right quarterback and team and place, there's no doubt.
How much do you toil around with your own offense? Like, if I said to you, I want to see what you're about. Give me you as an architect of the Dan Orlovsky offense. How much do you do that?
Oh, I do it all the time. And you're constantly changing the way you think offensively, I never like when coaches say we're going to do this offensively. I've never understood that. I've never understood when defensive coaches say we're going to stop the run.
Right.
What happens if they throw for 600 yards on you?
Right.
I often, think about my mind and what it would be schematically and all the things like that. I think that the biggest thing that I would be the foundation of what I would do offensively is constant balance and constant rhythm and constant being on the offensive, and whatever that looks like with whatever we have against whoever we're playing is the goal.
And yeah.
So, I don't think that you figure out what your players are really good at. You figure out what they're not good at, and you allow them to major in one and don't expose them to the other. And that football should be fluid. I think the biggest thing is when you're a good coach, you never have a destination that you're locked in on. It's always a moving target, and you just have to continue to bend and flow and move towards that target.
Yeah, I'm with you, and it's also, your vulnerabilities of your opponent come into play. Like, I mean, how many times? Funny when you look at Belichick throughout the years, and how they would attack in so many different ways. One week they would, be a run heavy big package, and another week they're using, James White out of the backfield, for 12 times. He would change everything to take advantage of weaknesses. And I always thought, coaches get married into their own system, and sometimes it's to their detriment.
Yeah, I mean, and that you see that throughout the NFL where a coach has a system and the system is predicated on, all right, well, we got a big time back, or, our tight end is the focal point, or we really want to distribute the ball in a short passing game. Well, what happens if that back goes down? Or what happens if he's not playing well? Or what happens if the defense that you're playing against plays a ton of coverage that doesn't allow for that short passing game, but they have weaknesses in other areas? And that's why, I've never liked teams that box them, pigeonhole themselves in. And, I think a lot of times coaches, they do that because that's all they know.
Yeah.
They can't be flexible. There's value in saying we're going to do what we do. I believe in that. But what do you do? What you do should be making sure that you're scoring points in a fashion to win the football game. So you can still have your own identity, but that identity needs to be something that can constantly change. Your identity should be rooted in fundamentals, not in X's and O's.
I'm completely with you. Dan Orlovsky with us on the Comcast Business Hotline. So what did you make of the Eagles and what went down with Mike Rowe and Carson Walsh?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I don't know the intimate details of how it all went down, and Doug saying one thing, and then within 24 hours, another thing. I'm of the belief that Doug Peterson is one of the five best coaches in the NFL. And I think that's been proven. I don't know if there's a lot of people that can argue that. So if he's making a decision in regards to that, or, you know, if he's signing off on a decision that somebody else is making, I believe in it. And I think that that is the best decision for his football team. I think that you can make the claim that there was some evidence that you know, you never like someone losing their job. No one needs to say
right.
that. But there's some evidence there that you go, it doesn't make a lot of sense why this team is doing this or why this player is doing this. And so when a coach determines this is not the best for me right now, this is not the best for my players right now or in the future, I think it's hard to dispute when somebody's had the amount of success he has had. Now, he's got to find a coach and somebody that gets his quarterback. And I don't think there's a lot of people on the planet that know quarterbacks really, really, really well and know offensive football really, really, really well, especially right now. Not 20 years ago, but right now. And that's going to be his biggest challenge, is finding that person that gets all those pieces and puts the puzzle together.
Is there anyone out there that you look at and you go, you know, a couple of the guys that impress you? Maybe they're a veteran type, or maybe they're a younger guy with that you know of that you think would be a good fit. Knowing that you have Wentz, and knowing yeah. that you have a lot of assets in this draft that's very rich in wide receiver. I think, you know, you need to have a really good architect to help Doug with his offense. Because I agree with you. As a coach, he's tremendous. I mean, his players love him. They play for him. I think he can use a wingman that's a good offensive architect.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I think there's a bunch of names that you're going to hear and that there's value in. I agree that it's got to be something. Like, I'll always be a little bit biased on backup quarterbacks or quarterbacks that had to play the game X's and O's and intelligence-wise rather than the physical specimen-wise.
Yeah.
So I'll be dead honest with you. I don't think there's a lot of people on the planet better than me right now to fill a role.
My like, man.
I would say Mike Kafka is somebody that...
Yeah.
And it's also because... it's not because Kafka has ties to the Eagles, but Kafka... with Andy Reid connection, but also the transition from the offense that Andy ran to what he does with Mahomes now. It's well documented that I think that's something that a player like Carson Wentz should be in that style. I think that you can make the case for Deuce Staley as long as that your quarterback coach is somebody that has got some conversation and some merit in that room to be had. I would say, you know, Jim Caldwell's name will be thrown around a little bit. I played for Coach Caldwell, and he's really smart.
It's funny, I brought him up. I just was talking about him like 5 minutes ago before you came on, because I love Caldwell. I think, if not you, Danny, I like Caldwell. I think he is smart. I like the fact that, you know, he worked with Peyton and that offense, because I think... they need to be more vertical, the Eagles. Now, they need to get the personnel to help them get more vertical. But I think with Carson, and you have talked about it all year long, you got to get more chunk plays with him at quarterback.
Yep. Yeah, and I think that goes to some of the people around him, too. Like, you've got to make sure, like, with calling football plays, you know, great play callers are like a great golfer in my eyes, where Tiger Woods talks about golf, and he says, he gets to a hole and he plays the hole backwards. Okay, if I want to make a four on this hole, how do I do that as the end result, as my starting point, and then work myself back to the tee box? Okay, well, if I want to get a chunk play on offense, how does that 30-yard completion actually happen? Okay, is it one guy whooping somebody on a route? Is it a route combination? Is it a play action? Is it, you know, so how do I actually kind of make that happen? And I think that's really important for however this offense is built moving forward, whoever the play caller and designer is you got to start stuff from the end result and work its way back and figure out how can you do that with what you have.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm completely with you. It's 11:02. You're listening to 97.5 The Fanatic, WPEN, Burlington, Philadelphia, broadcasting from the Xfinity Studios, along from Comcast, where Beasley Media Group station.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Joining us right now, Dan Orlovsky, ESPN, who does just a fabulous job breaking down everything. Did you feel, not that you needed any validation, but did you feel good about Carson's last 4 weeks and kind of how you were proven? Because you and I kind of saw it the same way with Carson, and how he responded with that kind of, those kids and the baby practice squad guys, and what he showed, the metal that he showed until, unfortunately, the playoff game. But were you at least pleased by that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, what makes, at least what I think makes me different, and what I hope people who listen to me make me different, is that my eyeballs have to be different. Like, I have to have different eyeballs than somebody else. Because when everybody is saying something, but my eyes are saying another thing, and then I go say it, it obviously felt, in a way, reaffirmed personally that it happened. And I was, listen, I'm a fan. I never shied away from that.
Right.
I don't think that my job should take that away from me. Like, I'm a fan. So, and I know what it's like to be in a position on the field where you feel by yourself, where you feel like what's around you is, like, really hard to work with. And so I know the challenge of that. So I was happy for him. And that he executed that way and whatnot. And so you certainly feel good when your eyes tell you something that so many other people are saying that's not true. And then it happens. And I think he should be super proud of himself. I think it's a really big month for him to learn from. You know, I think it's a huge month for him to learn of, you know, and I said this on air before, Carson Wentz became, that was his first time becoming a quarterback in the NFL rather than just a talent. And so I think that it's a paramount month for him to learn from, and learning from the playoff game as well is getting there and then having so much joy and then all of a sudden it getting snatched from him. You have to use that as motivation, because the truth is this, the grind now starts to set in when you're going into what, year 4 or 5.
Yeah.
This is when the grind starts to set in. This is when the daily grind, the obsession of craft, in the obsession of reaching that goal sets in, and you've made your money and you've had your success. Now this is when the daily question shows up of yes or no, yes or no, yes or no. And that's how you become great.
That's incredible. That's a great answer. Let me ask you about Lamar Jackson for a second, kind of move into the playoffs. What's the difference this year with Lamar Jackson as opposed to last year in the playoffs?
That's two things, really. Like, let's go through this season. The biggest difference between Lamar's season this year in comparison to last year is twofold. One, their third tight end addition, all three of those guys healthy. No one else personnel-wise matches up with those three tight ends. You put Boyle, you put Hayden Hurst, and you put Andrews on the field. All three of those guys can run block really well, can be part of your pass game. No team in the league has that. So when they put three tight ends on the field like that, they're 5 offensive linemen. Now, they technically have 8 blockers in their run game. 8. And so you go, okay, well, how the heck do I match up? Do I put big people on the field to stop the run? Well, if you do that, you can't defend the pass, because those three are 3 really good pass-catching tight ends. And 2, Lamar hit layups this year. And I'm not knocking his ability to throw in the least bit. There's throws that open up in their scheme because of that personnel. Last year he didn't hit it consistently. This year he did. And then I think the biggest thing in the playoffs was, or is and will be, is we saw this team get tested in Baltimore this year and them have to find ways to score points and win games through the air. And that wasn't the case last year. And they can rest and easy and rely on the fact that, listen, if they're in a fourth quarter game down four, they are good enough in the pass game to go down the field and execute that way rather than hand it off, hand it off, hand it off. So that'll be the biggest difference people should see.
Is Jimmy G the real deal?
Jimmy G's really good. You know, I think that what's happened with Jimmy G this year is if he does not turn the football over, they're really good and he's really good. The truth is the turnovers continue to show. And as everybody knows, in the playoffs, the mistakes get magnified. And I promise you, if he turns the football over against Minnesota, they're good enough to go turn it into points. We saw it at the end of the first half last week in New Orleans. Brees throws the interception. They turn it into points, and all of a sudden that game flips. And so the challenge for San Francisco this week is, if I asked you or really anybody watching NFL football this year, who's the best player on San Francisco's offense? It's a runaway George Kittle. Runaway, yep. Best player. Yep. Probably the best tight end of football. Well, the Vikings have the best defense in the NFL when it comes to covering and shutting down tight ends. Anthony Harris, Harrison Smith, Kendricks, those three guys for them, they cover the tight end so well in their match coverages. So who on San Francisco is going to step up outside of George Kittle? Because they're going to try and do things to scheme Kittle up, and they'll probably have some success with it. But somebody like Emmanuel Sanders or Deebo Samuel, it's like someone is going to have to carry the torch for San Francisco offensively to be good enough to help Jimmy Garoppolo play really well.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you're going to rely on that run game and try. Of all the underdogs this week, who has the best chance at winning? Do you believe Minnesota is that team?
Yeah, I took Minnesota this morning. I think Minnesota's just the strength, what they do offensively strength-wise, is the play-action pass. What strength-wise San Francisco has on defense is their pass rush, and how you minimize the pass rush is play-action pass. The weakness of San Francisco's defense is defending the play-action pass. So it sets up really well for Minnesota. Obviously, I talked about their defense against the tight end, and so I just think they're a team that believes they're Super Bowl worthy right now. And San Francisco's really good. I'm not saying that they're going to go get their doors blown off, but if I had to pick an upset, I'd be Minnesota.
All right, and then on Monday night, who do you like in the game, and who do you like in the NFL, Burrow or Lawrence? Of course, Lawrence will be another year, but who do you like better?
Both really good players. I think this is the heavyweight fight that boxing has wanted for two decades.
Yes.
This is one of the greatest college quarterback prospects we've ever seen in Trevor Lawrence, going against the greatest college quarterbacking season we've ever seen with Joe Burrow. I like Trevor Lawrence as a pro more.
Yeah, me too.
And I think Joe Burrow is going to be a good pro as well. Who do I like on Monday night? You know, my brain, my football brain, I go, how does Clemson stop LSU? How does Clemson stop LSU? And then I just look at the way the game could potentially go and how Clemson can physically own the line of scrimmage offensively, and the quarterback's run could be a big deal. And I just look at Clemson. Clemson will find a way defensively to mess with LSU. And the thing is, and I'm banking on this, LSU has not laid an egg all year. They have not played poorly all year. And that's hard to do, and I think if they do, Clemson can pounce.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Clemson's defense, I give the edge over LSU's defense, and so when I match that kind of up, I'm with you. And that team is just, they're always there, man. So I'm kind of with you with Clemson. And then finally, who hired the best coach of all the NFL candidates that got hired? Who do you like the best?
I think Ron Rivera in Washington, you know, because of his experience of having a young quarterback like Cam Newton will pay dividends for Dwayne Haskins. I've got to see his staff together. I do think the Cowboys hiring of Mike McCarthy is intriguing to me. I really do. I think the Redskins, I'm a big Ron Rivera guy. I think if you look at what happened at Carolina at the end of the year, it's in comparison to what was happening during the time when he was there, speaks volumes. I did not like him moving on from Kevin O'Connell as the offensive coordinator. I think Kevin O'Connell would be a name that I like is really, really well. So, but I think the Redskins.
What do you think? And this is personal. What do you think of Matt Rhule?
Oh, you know what? Duh, that's my answer. I forgot. I think everything that has been said about Matt Rhule, I don't know him personally. I've heard nothing but good things. You're watching that press conference. Here's the thing that I liked about his press conference the most. He used the phrase, one of the most important things for him is the accountability of his staff. And as a player, that's one of the things that you hate the most is when a coach sits there in your meeting room and tells you to do this stuff and you do it and then sells you out or cusses you out or you're not doing it enough and you hate that as players. And I love the fact that he said his staff is going to have staff accountability. I was wrong. The best hire was Matt Rhule.
Ah, there you go. That's selfish because he's a good friend. And I think he's and looking at it objectively, I think he's going to be a great coach at this level.
Yeah, I agree.
Danny, I got to tell you, I could do this all day. I don't want to take up any more of your time. You are the best, man. I really enjoy the conversation all the time. And listen, you got our vote for OC. You know that.
Well, I appreciate it, man. You never know. You never know. So I appreciate your kind words.
Thanks, brother. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the games.
You too, bud.
See you, buddy. There he is, Dan Orlovsky, ESPN. Nice job, Chunas. He's always a lot of fun.
How about that? I don't think there's anybody better on the planet than me right now.
I respect that.
I do too.
I respect that. And listen, dude's smart, man. Dude is a bright guy. He should be. That's what he should be doing. Forget about, slumming it on TV and radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.